Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Let's do it. Did you get the little treats I sent you?
Yes, thank you so much. And I have to tell you, the fragrance on that soap, I took it out of the box and I took it out of the package, put it back in the box because the box is so pretty. And I have it on my nightstand. And at night, I can smell it. It just love it.
Oh, okay, good. Well, just, you know, use it. Try it on your hands first. That is one of my clients out of New York, Sun Aroma, and I absolutely love them. Like, I'm about to love you here on the airplanes. Look! Look who's here! It is Janine Strong from Canada. She was originally, when I first found her, she was in Portland, I think, and now she's moved to Canada. She's a podcaster extraordinaire, and we are going to go at it back and forth because she's a heavy hitter. And what is it like in the world of podcasting? People don't take us, well, I shouldn't say that. Yeah, they don't. People don't take us seriously. We are a media force. We are an influence. We are independent contributors. We come out with a different perspective, a different point of view. And, you know, we're not beholden to the sponsors. We do have sponsors, but, you know, to the mechanical animals of being told what to do, what to say it, how to position it, all of that. We're going to talk about all of her great work, the great guests that she has, how she vets her guests, what's going on there in BC. And today, on our interview, Facebook has been called under the carpet. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, too, because I like me some Facebook. But, girl, there's some wicked stuff that goes on in social media. So, brains, help me welcome her to the edge. I'm so excited to have her. Janine Strong, how are you, baby?
I'm good, thank you. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Brains, you got to call them brains.
Brains. Hi, brains. I'll tell you, I let me just say, I'm nervous. I'm not used to being the interviewee. When I interview people, I'm fine. I don't have a problem at all. But actually being the one, maybe being in this, in the shoes of the people who are being interviewed, maybe this is good for me because I can feel how they're feeling, right?
Right. And I mean, you're smooth. I've listened to you. It's a conversation. It's a getting to know you because, again, if you never have a proper introduction, people don't know, like, and trust you.
Right.
And if they don't know, like, and trust you, they're not going to click on and listen to you. They're not going to share your information. They're not going to invest in you. But more importantly, invest in themselves. Because that's what you need to do. When you're on these shows, brains, it's not about me and Janine. We're not doing it for shit and giggles. I mean, really, yeah. We already have, you know, an audience and all that. We want to highlight and feature you. So you're making the investment in yourself. Let's dial back. How did you get started in the world of podcasting?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll just go back a little bit. 2001, I had a serious thyroid crash. I mean, this is almost literal. I was like a slug with cotton candy for a brain. It was so bad. And I remember I was working with an endocrinologist, and I remember the day he came in and he said, "All your labs are great." And I was sitting there going, "But I still feel like shit." Mm-hmm. And I remember the nurse after he left, the nurse saying to me, "You know, your labs are mid-range." She said, "Really, most people, especially women, do better with their labs in the upper range." So I started working with different naturopaths and I had, I had lots of lab work done, like minerals and heavy metals, and everything was just really off. So I started this detox cleansing program and I started feeling better. I've actually never really gotten my energy back completely, but I'm a lot better. So I started my podcast 6 years ago. And it seemed like every time I went somewhere, I was a magnet for people, mostly women, but some men, who knew they had thyroid issues, but weren't getting any help.
Mm.
And I started thinking, and I'm educating people, because when I'm interested in something, I dive deep, I do tons of research. And so I was educating people, because people would be saying, I'd go to my doctor, he'd say, my labs were good, I don't have thyroid issues. They'd usually just test T4 and TSH, which you need to do much more than that. And several people said, you know, because they were depressed, because they felt like shit, their doctor would put them on an antidepressant, like that was gonna solve anything. So I was doing a lot of educating and trying to help people wherever I went. And then I'm living up here, I'm on a homestead, I'm out in the boonies, and I've had a pretty rich life. I've met lots of amazing people. I've done lots of training, RN, lots of energetic healing, massage therapist, life coach, blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of feeling, you know, like the first 4 years were fun, but I started feeling like I was kind of going to waste. You know, I've got all these skills and all these contacts, and I'm hanging out here on a homestead. And then one day, literally, I'm taking a shower and I hear, you should start a podcast.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, I like podcasts, but I don't know anything about podcasts. So I started thinking that, wow, this might be a really good way to educate people and to reconnect with all these amazing people that I met throughout my life. And so it took me about 5 months. I do everything myself to figure out how to do it. And I started my podcast with my first episode with Janie Beauthorpe, who wrote Stop the Thyroid Madness and has an amazing internet presence for thyroid issues for people. And it just kind of, I think I had maybe 12 listeners when I started.
Hey, you got to start somewhere. You got to start somewhere. I know when I started my podcast, I was invited to be a co-host on a nationally syndicated radio show. And I heard my voice and I heard the questions and the people asked me to come back. And girl, I knew I had arrived. I said, okay, sign me up. And it was in its inception. I've had my show for about 17 years.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah, but what people fail to realize is that they're really impactful. You know, we're not doing this just because we want to hear ourselves talk. It's a lot of work involved in this. You've got to vet the guest. You've got to make sure that the guest is in alignment with your messaging because your head is on the chopping block. First thing you're going to say is, oh, I heard that, you know, on Janine's show, or I heard it on April's show. And there you are. I'm very selective about, I have a variety show, but I'm very selective. I don't do, you know, product endorsements and things of that nature because, again, you get a bad batch of some, you know, stuff and people done got the itchy BBs and the coochie wallies, but what? They heard it on your show. They heard it on my show and it's not good. Also, I like to banter back and forth with my guests because I don't go along to get along.
Mm-hmm. No, I do too. I do too.
I'm not going to disrespect you. Everybody has an opinion, you know, but again, people want to hear opposing point of views. That's how they learn. That's how they grow. How did you come up with the premise for your show?
Well, I wanted it to be inspiring. I've always been interested in health. Like I said, I'm an RN, retired RN. I've done all kinds of energetic healing and massage therapy and touch for health and, you know, lots and lots of things. And, you know, like I said, every time I'm interested in something, I do tons of research and I try to learn as much as I can. And so I wanted it to be educational. There's a lot of spiritual, esoteric, all different kinds of topics, but health is the main focus. And my tagline is inspiring conversations with ordinary people leading extraordinary lives. Because let's face it, we're all just human beings, right? But some people have managed to create some extraordinary situations for themselves and are really helping people. And so that's my focus.
What's a little bit of your vetting process? How do you go and find your guests and select your guests that are in alignment with, you know, what you want to produce?
Well, a lot of times I'll see a video or read a book and I'll think, let's see if that person will come on my podcast. I do have, I think, four publishers who contact me now when they have authors that they think would be appropriate. So I also have to read their books, you know, and I do, every guest I have on, I mean, mostly the internet is what I use, but I get on the internet and learn as much about them as I can. And I mean, this has been such an awesome way to make friends. I have met so many soul sisters and brothers through this. It's just, I mean, sometimes I get off and I'm just like, my heart is just so full. I can't believe how many wonderful people I've met. And a lot of times my guests will suggest someone else that they think would be appropriate and that would like to be on.
I get a lot of referrals and testimonials and all of those things. What do you think of monetization of podcasts? You know, you're going to get the people that come on and they'll say, oh, well, I don't pay to play. I find that offensive. And the reason why is because, number one, we're not playing. This is a serious news outlet. Number two, you value me enough to promote you, your book, your thought process, to deliver you to my audience, and I walk away with a smile. That's not smart business. This is business for me. We're not playing here. There's a cost to doing business. If you were to get a booth at an event, if you are to speak on the stage now with some of these heavy hitters, you pay to be on their stage. Mm-hmm. I think people don't value what we do. And again, it's not about us. We're promoting you. We already have a platform. What do you think about monetization and being paid for the work that you do?
No, I think it's important. I personally, this is my service. I'm lucky that, you know, I have enough retirement savings and things built up that I don't have to worry about finances in doing this. So, and you know, really, I when I look back, I'd say ever since the 70s, my life has pretty much been about service. You know, it's never, that's my first consideration. Money has, I mean, when I started nursing, I remember, oh God, I think my salary was $9.10 an hour.
Wow.
I know people that, you know, that was in the early 80s, but so it's never been, I don't know that, you know, we all have our areas where we have challenges, and that's just not my area. My area is more relationships.
And it's not, you know, and again, like I said, however people decide to do it is fine, but it's just the value. And unfortunately, money is the tenure that people are using. You know, if they are able to promote book, if they're cross promoting, a lot of times you'll get people on your show. They don't share the link. They don't cross promote. You know, that's very important. They're riding on your name and your credibility. You can introduce me to your audience. There's the barter process. There is a way to advertise. There's a lot of ways of quote unquote monetizing without actually exchanging dollars. So I get that.
Yeah.
Also a very interesting perspective as to what's going on in this day of COVID. We won't go into it too much. And I respect, you know, everybody's opinion on that. But as a nurse and as a person that has, now I don't know, with thyroid disease, does that compromise your immune?
Well, there are two types. One is autoimmune and one isn't. So it depends on which type you have. But I will say that I was in Costa Rica just before the lockdown. I made it back 2 days before all of that. I, you know, not knowing what was going on, honest to God, I swear I'm looked after. I have a celestial team that that if it wasn't for them, who knows where I'd be. But I was volunteering at an animal rescue sanctuary, which also encouraged me to become an animal communicator. So I'm also an animal communicator now. But when I came back and started really looking into all of this, as one of my guests said, an MD, he was in Australia and came back and he said, I smelled a rat.
Oh boy.
And you know, I started questioning, and I have put hundreds of hours of research into this. It feels to me like one of my roles right now is to educate people about this. And I've had so many doctors, scientists, independent journalists who are not going along with the narrative. There are thousands upon thousands of doctors and scientists and nurses and lawyers standing up and saying, this is wrong. Just from a common sense perspective, why does everyone in the world have to have a quote, they're not vaccines, but to quote unquote, have a vaccine? For something that has a 99.96 rate of recovery, it just doesn't.
I'm not going along with those numbers. I'm going along with the numbers of the people that have passed away. I'm looking how far and how vast that this has, went along with that. I don't go along with the narrative of how it was derived. You know, I've got my own theory on that. But I've vaccinated myself. I've traveled to foreign countries, many of them. I've gotten malaria shots. I've gotten yellow fever. Hell, I don't know what's in those either. Okay. I don't do the flu shot. If I go in, I don't know what's in Tylenol. So I understand. I've worked with people here at the Salk Institute and SDSU and different clinical researchers. I just got a different perspective. I took a chance on it. I'm not going to push anybody to do anything that they don't feel is right for them or their family. It is an individualized choice. But I'm not in the bully pulpit either. I'm not going to beat you up or try to snatch your mask off or, you know, try to all of that. I'm not doing any of that. Just stay away from me. I'm going to stay 6 feet away from you. I'm going to keep my mask on. I've got to do what's best for me. And it's important that people like you that have done the research, that have been there on the front line, seeing what's going on. Because we know that medicine is not a perfect science. They are practicing medicine. Okay?
And science is always evolving. All right? It really irritates me when I hear people say, the science. Science is always changing and evolving with information. There isn't the science. You know, it's because as you get in new information, you have to adjust your beliefs and your ideas about things. Some people seem to want to just put their blinders on and just, I have seen, I didn't realize for many years, maybe until the last 10 years that I've been really lucky to be able to hold opposing points of view at the same time and weigh them and look at them. And that's what I do with this. You know, I've seen so many nurses, especially a lot of nurses are leaving.
It's scary.
They're seeing the damage that's being done by the vaccines. That's why they're leaving. They don't
want. Let me tell you what's happening here. And it's really scaring me. At the Children's Hospital, they have mandated that all of the nurses and physicians or whatever that have contact with patients have to have the vaccine. They just told them day before yesterday, if you don't have it, you can either move to a different department that does not have access to clients. You can put in for a temporary leave of absence, or you can apply for another position. That's pretty harsh. I get it. If my child was there, I want full-on protection for my baby that cannot be vaccinated. But also, too, these are healthcare professionals that deal with this day in and day out, and they should be able to make their own choice.
Right, and they've been dealing with patients this whole time without being vaccinated. Right. And now all of a sudden they can't work unless they're vaccinated. That doesn't make sense to me. Right. Where's the common sense in that?
But you put in other protections too. Look at things like the seatbelt law. Look how many lives it saved. I know it's a little different, but also the no cell phones. How many lives driving while, on the cell phone, those type of things. No smoking in heavily populated areas. All of these things are protection. And, you know, sometimes you've got to force people to do things. This is something of monumental proportion. I don't know how old you are, but I've never
seen. I'm 71.
Well, I've been here 59 years. I've never seen anything like this. The biggest health scare was the AIDS, and you had to have, you know, full-on contact until people got educated on what was going on and how to protect themselves. But that was the biggest pandemic kind of situation that I had seen in a long time. So again, it's like a child that's unruly. You put them in timeout until you figure out what to do. It's very, very difficult. Yes, I'm nervous too. I took both my shots and came home the second one and slept for 12 hours, but I'm fine. I don't know what the long-term effects are, but I have not come down with any symptoms. And again, you know, I'm a germaphobe anyway. I kind of keep my distance. I don't want to live in a bubble, though. I understand what you're saying, Jadine. I want to get on that airplane. I want to go out in the restaurants. I want to, you know, interact with people. I want to give hugs. I'm that kind of person. But if I think you got something, I'm staying away from you.
Well, just let me point out a couple of things. First of all, the PCR test that's being used mm-hmm. to diagnose COVID does not diagnose COVID. It doesn't diagnose anything. It can't tell the difference between any other coronavirus and this one. And the inventor of the test, Carrie Mullis, specifically said that it was not meant to be used as a diagnostic tool. It was meant to be used for research. It can't tell the difference between little protein pieces from your last cold and a coronavirus and the SARS-CoV-2. Okay. So, and the CDC has said already that the test doesn't work, that it's not accurate, and they plan on dumping it at the end of the year. I don't know why they're waiting. They're coming up with a new test, but they've even said it's not accurate. Okay. It the way too many false positives. So there's that aspect. The other thing is that, you know, one of the narratives that keeps coming around is that of asymptomatic transmission, that, you know, somebody who's not sick can give this to you. If you're not sick, if you don't have symptoms and you're not sick, you're not going to, there's nothing to transmit. And, but there's this constant, what really irritates me is there's this constant fear mongering. It's making everybody afraid. And the statistics now are out that the last year's season, well, and where did the flu go? All of a sudden there's no flu. It's all COVID. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the deaths were approximately the same as a severe flu season.
Oh no. Yeah. From what I've seen here in the US, and I've seen someone on a ventilator.
Yeah, the ventilator killed people.
Yeah, it did.
Ventilator,
they didn't know
people.
What to do. Okay,
remdesivir, well, and the ventilator remdesivir damages the kidneys.
All right, so now I get your position. What do we do? How do we address this? Because it's very real. Do you agree that it's real?
Well, I'll tell you. I've been researching terrain model versus germ theory, and I have a lot of questions. Yes, people are getting sick, but I think there are a lot of toxins that a lot of people are detoxifying, that's what's happening. The majority of people who have died have comorbidities.
What is that?
Look at this. The adolescents are being given the shots now. And there are many, many, many reports of heart problems, myocarditis and pericarditis after the shots. Most of the teenagers who are having problems are boys who are athletes. And I thought about that. And I just recently listening to Dr. Charles Hoff talk about how the shots cause microclotting in the body. And the microclotting starts in the capillaries, because as the blood flows through the veins and the arteries and down into the capillaries are very tiny. And the spike protein has spikes on it. Okay.
Right.
And those spikes, when they get into the capillaries, they scratch the inside of the capillaries. Mm. Now, when you get a cut, platelets come to the, they come to the cut to stop bleeding so you don't bleed to death. So what's happening is platelets are aggregating in the capillaries where the spike proteins have scratched the inside of the capillaries, and they're blocking them, and that can't be reversed. So what he was saying was that there are thousands of capillaries in the lungs that are being blocked. Now, blood has to flow through the lungs. And when these kids are doing their athletic endeavors, where their heart's pumping, right? They're really, really going, their heart is, it can't function properly it because the blood flow is being blocked. Mm. And that's what's causing the pericarditis and the myocarditis. And that just made so much sense to me, because I thought, why is it mostly male athletes that are having, I hear hardly anything about women, but it's mostly, it's the guys who are the athletes who are playing basketball and soccer and football.
Well, then you've got people like No Nonsense Nicki Minaj. She's out there spreading, this information that, my cousin's friend is now sterile because of, I don't know.
I have listened to a couple of talks with infertility clinics, people who are have infertility clinics, and they have stated that before the shot, the male sperm motility, egg viability has been good, and after the shot, when they're tested, there have been quite a few who nothing. Mm. There's no egg viability or sperm motility.
Well,
see, I saw a graph, and it was from Pfizer. 48 hours after the jab, the Pfizer jab, the organ with the most spike proteins in it is the ovaries. Mm. And then the second highest was the bone marrow, which is where you make your white blood cells. Right. And I've just been reading lately, doctors who have been testing white blood cells after the jab, people's white blood cell counts going way down.
Wow. Well, you know what? It's going to be hit and miss, because again, we can't sit here idly and do nothing. Okay. So the risk sometimes outweighs the reward, and I get that. So what, tell me about you as a harpist. I want to hear about that. How did you find the harp, or how did the harp find you?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's another wild story. So in Portland, my chiropractor, she was also a musician. And she and her assistant were doing a weekend workshop at the coast to, this is going to sound pretty out there, but it was a workshop to learn how to help beings who have passed over, but who are stuck and can't move on. And she brought her musical instruments, and one of the instruments she brought was a harp.
Wow.
And I've always found the harp fascinating.
It's very sexy.
Yeah, and it's such a beautiful sound. And I just sat down and doodled on her harp for a little bit. And the next week when I went home, I started making phone calls, and I found a harp teacher who will rent out a harp, until you feel confident that you want to buy one of your own. And I started taking harp lessons. Wow. And I've just been playing on and off. Sometimes I don't play for a while, and then I start playing again. Excuse me. But I really enjoy the harp. Well, I used to play
string instrument. I play the guitar, or should I say, I pluck the guitar. I'm taking guitar lessons, and I did that to stimulate my brain. I wanted to learn something different, and reading is great. But I see how people really connect with music, mm-hmm. and how it transcends you into a different state of mind. But it's not the easiest thing to do. I mean, you got to keep the time. You got to remember your finger placement. You've got to be able to strum at the same time and then sing. Girl, it's a lot of work.
Well, actually, the harp is one of the hardest instruments to learn.
I know, because you have the pedals as well.
if I didn't play piano when I was growing up, I can't imagine having to learn the harp and learn how to read music at the same time. I don't think I could have done it. Luckily, I already knew how to read music. You know, I knew a lot about music. I played classical piano. And so, you know, the harp for me was another step. But I can't imagine just starting with the harp.
I know. So let me ask you some random questions. I love to do that.
Sure.
If you were an animal, what animal would you be and why?
Well, I have to say that what popped into my head, and that was a horse.
A horse? Why a horse?
You know, horses are amazing creatures. They're very healing. I've been doing a lot of animal communication work with a farm animal rescue sanctuary up here in Canada. And whenever she has a problem with one of her animals, she'll message me and ask me if I can connect and find out what's going on. So it's been great. I get a lot of practice that way. but I, you know, horses are so healing. They're very empathetic. They really know where you're at.
They sure do. Because one of them ran to an edge of a cliff with me. I was scared to death. And the horse was in total control. And I politely got off the saddle, gave her a couple sugar cubes. I had some carrots in my backpack, gave her the backpack, and we walked back 3 miles. I haven't been one since. But I love them. It's even how they look at you. They look at you, and there is definitely a communication going on. They've got sarcasm. I mean, you know, just like any other animal in a way. They've got care and compassion. They've got love. They'll nudge you, you know, and they're very, very powerful. Since we're talking about animals, and that's kind of why I brought that up, tell me a little bit about your ability to communicate with the animals.
Well, I've never considered myself psychic. My sister was always the psychic one. I have more of a, what I would call a very accurate intuition. Mm-hmm. And when I listen to it and I follow it, I find it's always right. I found this, her name's Danielle McKinnon. She's the person who I took the course from. And it was pretty cool. I did one of the live ones. And there's a woman in France. There's another woman in, where is she? New Zealand. Another one in, you know, all over the world. We were all over the world. So it was pretty cool. And I felt like I could do it, but I still had, first of all, you want to really clear yourself and make sure you're, you know, a blank slate. So I have a method of like going through all my chakras, my energy centers, and just clearing them of everyone's energy so that all that's left is mine. And then she has us create a room. Mine's sort of etheric. There's a couch for the person to lay on. If it's a pet, you want to connect with the human and the pet, because usually I've dealt a lot with behavior problems. So you want to work with both together, right? And I bring the human in first, and they usually show themselves to me as, like, they could be going through a really bad time, but they like to show themselves to me as who they really are, maybe on a soul level, you know? And after we're done connecting, I let them go recline on the couch and be comfortable. And then I bring the pet in, and I talk to the pet. And sometimes I will do what's called body mapping, which is really cool with the pet. And I'll ask them, will you allow me to feel what you're feeling in your body so I can see where they're at? And then if there's a behavior problem, I talk back and forth between the pet and the human and try to resolve it. And I've gotten some pretty cool behavior changes.
Mm.
And I have to say, the one thing that made me know that really firmed for me, I'm not sure how I want to say that, but that I can do this, is in my last exam in the course, I was told that this dog had some issues, and it happened to be around his bedding. That's all I was told. And I said, well, I'm seeing this dog humping his bedding. And she said, yeah, that's what it is. And I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't believe I
Wow.
So, yeah, wow. So that was kind of the final little key for me that, yeah, I'm good at this and I can do this.
That's amazing. What brings you great joy?
Right now with all the my animals, really. I have a dog, 3 cats, chickens, and ducks. Mm. Doing the podcast really does give me great joy. I'm so glad, though, since I do everything myself and it's not something I'm making money at, I upload every 2 weeks. So, you know, it's not like a daily thing for me because I do all my own editing and, you know, and it's a lot of work. And I've got a homestead, organic gardens and orchards and, you know, animals to take care of.
Wow.
So I'm pretty busy, but this is, you know, like I said, the connection that I make with people is so important to me. Right. I mean, I have this vision. I would love to have everybody that I've had on my podcast get together at some ranch for a, you know, for a 4-day weekend and just, you know, just connect with each other. I think it would be so much fun.
Right, right. How do you want to be remembered? What do you want your legacy to be?
That's a really, that's a good question. I think I would say as a person who did everything she could to help other people.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. What's your favorite junk food?
Luckily, I don't do much in the junk food department, but I do love my chocolate.
Oh, I know. White chocolate, dark chocolate, or milk chocolate?
Oh, dark. Absolutely dark.
Really? I don't like the bitterness of the dark chocolate. Well, and you know what? It's a lot more sugar in milk chocolate and white chocolate. And maybe that's probably why I kind of like that, all of that.
Yeah, I've kind of cut out sugar. Not completely, but I do very little. When I'm baking, I like to use monk fruit sweetener. I use coconut sugar, honey, maple syrup, but I don't use any cane sugar. And I don't eat much in the way of cane sugar. So after you do that for a while, you kind of lose your taste for it.
Yeah, you do. I've extracted a lot of sugar and salt as well. And you can taste it immediately, you know.
Yeah. I mean, so many things that other people like, I'll taste and I'll go, oh, that's way too sweet for me. I can't do that.
And my mother, you know, unfortunately, she has some of the same, she didn't have COVID when she passed away, but she lost her taste her sense of taste and smell. And it was so horrible. Mm. Because she would just eat, trying to still connect. So what I would do is I would, you know, make her food a lot more colorful, give her a lot more textures, you know, or have a conversation. Oh God, you know, these greens, you know, you put a little vinegar on them and it would kind of spark her memory, you know. So
that was very smart.
Well, you know, I tried, and being a caregiver was something that I was blessed to do for my mother. And she passed here a few months ago, but she died in the comfort of my arms. And I was just, you know, I think about the people that we lost in all of these hospitals, in the retirement homes and assisted living programs, all of that. So what would you say in closing to someone that has lost someone, you being a former nurse, you being a communicator, you being a person that has a very strong position on, you know, healthcare? What would you say to a person or a family that's just lost someone or they're in that transition right now? What would you say to comfort them?
You know, I have read many, many books and listened to many videos of people who've had near-death experiences. Honest to God, not one of them wanted to come back.
Oh, I know. I heard that too. You know,
it was so beautiful on the other side and so freeing. I mean, these human bodies are so limiting, you know, that they're fine. It's we who are left behind who are grieving and having difficulties. But the people who have transitioned, I really don't think that anyone transitions before their time, that that's set in the time between lives, in the where you choose your family, you choose your, you know, kind of your basic circumstances of life that you're going to play out. And you do choose, you know, approximate what your death is going to be. And so I don't think there are any accidents or coincidences. And I do feel very strongly that once you transition to the other side, you're fine. If you've been in pain, there's no pain anymore. You're with your loved ones who have already passed and your soul family. And I truly do feel like I've helped quite a few people transition. My mother, my dad, my ex-husband, I went back to help him transition years after we were divorced. When I was a nurse in the hospital, I got kind of a reputation because I would go into people's rooms who were terminally ill and I would just sit with them and talk to them. And one of the things that I would say is, you know, if you're ready to go, it's okay. You can go. You don't have to stick around for other people. And honestly, it would be very shortly after that.
I know. That's what I did with my mother. I got to lay my chest on her chest and feel her very last heartbeats. Like she felt my very first heartbeats when I came into the world. And Dr. Cornell West told me something that I will never, ever forget. He says, baby, you know, it's different when you come into the world because, no, he didn't call him baby. He say Sister April because he called him Sister April. He say, you come in through a portal between urination and defecation in a puddle of slime and blood. Some people are forced out. Some people are cut out. Some people are pushed out. Some people come out naturally. But when you arrive, they've thrown you a party. They've bought you gifts. There's a bright light. Everybody's happy to see you and carry you through on this journey and hug and kiss you. He says, but the transition to the next is the same. He says, some people are forced out. Some people are pushed out. Some people go naturally. Some people are cut out. He says, but you have to give them permission to go because there's people waiting for you at the other party.
That is profoundly wise.
It was so wise. And it really helped me because I know that there was people there to greet her. You know, I played my singing bowls and I could literally feel, Janine, that it was a portal that was opening and the angels were coming to get her. And it was beautiful. I'm bent, but I'm not broken. Last thing I want to ask you before we conclude is your work with the Akashic Records.
That's really interesting because the last person that I just uploaded yesterday reads the Akashic Records and she gave me an Akashic Record reading on Friday.
Wow.
So according to her, I'm going to learn how to read the Akashic Records from her. I would like to do that. Is that we all have our own Akashic Record library and our own Akashic Record keepers who keep our records for us. And everything about us, all our incarnations, all our lives on other planets, you know, whatever, are all in our Akashic Records. And they can be accessed to help us understand. I didn't go into past lives because that wasn't my concern, but you know, very often going into past lives helps you to understand what's going on now in this life. And just kind of understanding, you can ask questions about, you know, are you on purpose? You know, are you doing what you're supposed to be doing? You know, if you're conflicted about something, the record keepers can help. And I think it's a really good tool when you're in a place where you just, you know, if you feel confident and like you know where you're going and what you're doing, you probably don't need it. But if you're in conflict or feel stuck, also she said that she's gone back and they've rewired the person or the situation so that they can let go of grief and move on. She talked about a doctor who knew she wanted to do more, get out, speak. She just couldn't do it. And they went into the Akashic Records, went back to a lifetime where she was a doctor, but she was, I can't remember. She might've been killed for it, but something where now she felt like she couldn't move forward. Through doing the Akashic Record work, they resolved that in the past. And Lisa said right away, the next week, the woman just, everything changed. She moved forward and started doing the work that she really wanted to do, but she just couldn't get herself to do it before. So, wow. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
It's another way of getting unstuck and being open and honest and being a communicator and a facilitator. And you do an amazing job at that, Janine Strong. Can you tell my brains how to get in contact with you and to learn more about your podcast, your and Janine, you are an amazing communicator and facilitator, podcaster, and lover of mankind, womankind, and animal kind. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you so that they can share in those experiences.
Okay. Well, my podcast website is realjanine.com. And the problem is Janine is an odd spelling. My mother picked it out. My dad spelled it. So Janine is J-A-N-E-A-N, kind of like Jane Ann. So that's the best way is my podcast. Also, if somebody wants to email me or connect with me, realjanine@gmail.com is my email for the podcast.
Okay. And brains, you know, now social media is like all over the place. We don't know what's going to go on from one day to the next, but know that we're on multiple platforms. We're on RSS feeds, iTunes, Apple, Google, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, yada, yada. So find us, look for us, seek us out. That's what we do. We create content for you to make you smarter, headier, and use your brain. Thank you so much, Janine. Come back and visit me real soon, okay?
Thank you. This has been delightful. Thanks.
You too. Bye, brains.
Bye.